consumers to make full complaints. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
This is Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dan and Mary Udell of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, the local hangout of the airwaves for Greene and Columbia counties.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Naomi Kabalkin Bonenberg. Naomi Kabalkin is a part-time resident of the Hudson Valley, as her heart is always in her native Staten Island, the forgotten borough of New York City. Naomi has worked in the field of HIV/AIDS prevention and education for a grand total of 23 years. During her time as a prevention educator, she has received her Bachelor of Arts degree in English with a concentration in writing, as well as a Master's degree in Secondary Education. No, she will not edit your paper. Naomi currently resides in the Hudson Valley, where she lives with her two children and her husband. Naomi has no hobbies or interests at this time, as she has a toddler who she is completely and unapologetically obsessed with. In her time prior to having said toddler, she enjoyed playing music, guitar and clarinet, exploring abandoned properties, the creepier looking the better, trying new restaurants, the weirder the better, attending lewd nights out with friends and sleeping past 6 a.m. One day, Naomi hopes to go back to school for her PhD and to write a book about something that might actually interest someone to read. Naomi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Naomi.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I'm interested. Would you ever explore a house that some deem to be haunted?
Absolutely, hands down, no hesitation.
Would you write about this experience?
Depends on what happens. Something, nothing might happen. Like, I might sit there and be like, okay, this is the lamest haunted house I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, Staten Island, Naomi.
Yes.
I know you love Staten Island. And
no.
I know you
I love the people on Staten Island. I don't love Staten Island itself.
Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. I'm going to test your knowledge.
Oh, Christ. I'm going to fail.
Which pizza place, Mike, you might take part in this quiz.
Got it.
Which pizza place won the world's best pizza in 2012?
So there was a conflict between Brothers Pizza and, was it Goodfellas?
What's your answer?
I think it was Goodfellas that actually won it, but I think Brothers was supposed to win it. It started this whole like riot.
Goodfellas won 2012. Nice. Well done, Naomi.
Well done.
Now, can you name three well-known pizza places or Italian places in restaurants in Staten Island?
Okay. Do you want well-known ones, or do you want ones that actually have good food?
All right. So there's three that start with the letter N.
Well, there's Nunzio's.
Yes.
I'm trying to think what else has a letter N. Nunzio's. I don't know.
Nino's. And
see, Nino's I wasn't a fan of. Nunzio's I liked.
Nona's Pizzeria.
Then but that's only for the grandma pie.
Then there's a Royal Crown.
Well, Royal Crown is a bakery.
Right, what's the name of the bridge that was built over the Staten Island to Staten Island?
Okay, but there's three bridges that go to Staten Island. So you're either talking about the Verrazano, yeah, the Outer
the one,
Bridge.
That's the one.
Or the Bayonne. There's
right,
three
I'm
ways.
I'm going to ask you two of you a quiz question.
Okay.
Naomi, you probably know the answer to this.
Probably not.
No, you probably will.
I won't.
How much does it cost to go over the, what's the name of that bridge?
The Verrazano?
Verrazano Bridge.
$5.
$5?
Oh, God. No, it's like, well, with Easy Pass, you get the Staten Island discount. Don't tell anybody I moved because I still get the Staten Island discount. But, I think it's $8 with the discount and like 15 or 16 without it.
Oh,
or is
brother.
It 18? I think it's 18 now. It went up, right?
Well, at the time of this, somebody wrote this online, it's $16.
Good grief. Yeah. To cross 16, the bridge?
Yeah.
I thought the Rip Van Winkle Bridge was expensive.
Yeah.
No, that's why you have to have the Staten Island discount, because it knocks down a huge amount that you're paying.
Boy, I guess so.
Did you know that Staten Island is the least populated island?
I did not know that.
Did you know that?
Least populated island of where?
Oh, the five boroughs.
Oh, well, yeah.
And do you know what one is the most populated?
Long Island?
What's your guess, Mike?
Long Island.
Brooklyn comes in to be the most populated borough with approximately 2,621,793 people. Mm. How they get the 93, I don't know, but...
They counted that guy.
Yeah.
That guy.
Brooklyn, you said?
Brooklyn, yeah.
Brooklyn, okay. Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
So can you get yourself transported from there to somewhere on the river?
I cannot. Our first song, Naomi, is Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Mm. Now, is this the Wizard of Oz Judy Garland?
Yeah.
It is. Have you seen the movie with Renee Zellweger?
No.
Yeah, where she portrays Judy. She was up for the Academy Award. I don't know if she won the Oscar,
yes.
Yeah.
No, I've heard about it, but I don't get to watch anything but like Thomas the Train right now.
That's okay.
It wasn't called Thomas the Train when I was growing up. It was called Thomas the Tank Engine.
What was up with that show? It was great, but they're like, who can we get to narrate the stories? Let's get the most burnt hippies, vulgar hippies, Ringo Starr, and then George Carlin. It's like, don't let the children know what these guys did before Shining Time Station, because they will be traumatized.
No, but you're 100%. Right, but we also, I think we had looked this up, Andy, where it was like...
He was really busy in his office.
It was like in the... Shut up. It was like in the U.S., it was like one... It was called Tom... It was Tom... Well, now it's also Thomas and Friends.
Right, in Britain, it was called Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, so it was like...
And there was a guy in it called the Fat Controller, and they had to change that because it wasn't politically correct.
Right, so now he's Sir Topham Hatt, but they constantly make cracks.
Sir Topham Hatt.
Well, because he wears a top hat.
Oh, okay.
But Sir Topham Hatt, they constantly make fat jokes about him, like DL fat jokes, where it's like, Sir Topham Hatt couldn't help because he was instructed by his doctor not to lift. You know? Or Sir Topham Hatt couldn't keep up because he was, like, you know, having a heart attack or his arteries were carotid or something. Like, it's really like, thank God the kids don't know.
His engine needed lubing.
No, it's terrible.
So that's your first song. And it's, of course, Somewhere Over the Rainbow is from the 1939 film The Wizard of Oz and sung by Judy Garland, who was starring as Dorothy Gale. And it won the Academy Award at that time for Best Original Song and became her signature song.
Why did you pick that song?
So in February of 2000, actually it was February 12th. So February 12th of 2000 and, '15, I was pregnant and the baby just wasn't supposed to be. Mm. So, that ended terribly. And, I went on to become like obsessed with getting pregnant. Poor Andy was with me through this whole thing, so he was awesome.
Poor Brian.
Poor Brian. Yeah. Brian is my husband who lived it, and we're not good people when it comes, like, we're not good with loss. Like, we're just, it really, I would say to a large degree, broke us, and we really had to, like, rebuild who we were. And it was 2016, not 15. I'm getting my numbers all screwy. But anyway, so February 12th, 2016, we were actually, I had to go through a procedure to remove this baby who wasn't meant to be. And so a child that is born after a loss is called a rainbow baby. So when I was pregnant with my now toddler, I would play from my belly Somewhere Over the Rainbow every single day, sometimes multiple times a day. And while I was trying to get pregnant, I would play it over and over and over again because I was looking for my rainbow.
Away above the chimney tops, that's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why can't I? If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why?
Was Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Great song, Naomi.
Thanks, I tried.
I was just saying before we come back in there that I'd just seen the ending of that movie for the first time in its entirety, the ending, about 3-4 months ago. Weird.
They say a lot of historians think that L. Frank Baum, who wrote the book, made it an analogy, or I suppose an allegory, for the Gilded Age. So the Yellow Brick Road, I think, represented the gold standard, and the Cowardly Lion was William Jennings Bryan, who was a populist politician at the time. And initially her slippers were silver, not ruby. Disney changed it to ruby because it looked better in film. Mm-hmm. But the silver slippers were supposed to represent bimetallism, which would be a silver standard in conjunction with gold that would allow for inflation, which kind of would have been really helpful to debtors at that time. So that's just sort of an aside for it, maybe why some of that weirdness is there. It's all very symbolic, potentially.
I think sometimes we read too much into things.
It could be. I think L. Frank Baum was asked about it, and he was like, nope, just made it up.
Yep. So. Now, Naomi,
yes.
Your first item is a stuffed life-size version of Simon.
Oh, yeah, Simon's my toddler. I can't live without him.
Yeah, so now, how is this?
See, I thought it was Simon Cowell.
Oh, God, no. I can live without him. I can live without Simon Cowell.
Yeah, me too.
I'm sure.
So tell me, how do you envisage this stuffed version? What's the material it's going to be made out of?
Well, something soft and squishy like Simon.
Like a teddy bear?
Well, he's not fuzzy all around like that. He's got long hair on his head, but the rest of him...
Like a doll, or...?
I'm thinking like kind of like a pillow person. You ever see those pillow people? So this
body pillow people. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you asked me about what I wanted to bring with me, and I had actually not, around the same time, I had seen this advertisement where you can take a picture of someone and make a stuffed like version of them.
Right.
And I remember my little sister actually made a stuffed version of my brother-in-law for my other sister's son, because he was like obsessed with him. And we all thought it was kind of funny, but like in a weird, creepy, funny way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, what things would I bring with me? And you said I couldn't bring Simon. So I was like,
stuffed version
of Simon.
Now, are you going to make him the stuffed size of what he is? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to make him like life size, as in your size?
No.
His size.
The size he is now.
His
yeah.
size.
And I'm gonna have his like his shampoo on there, so it smells like him.
Oh, it smells like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look unapologetically obsessed with my child.
Well, that's your child.
Yeah.
Obsessed.
So you're allowed to do that, though.
I know. And then my older son, just so that he doesn't feel left out, I stalk him.
Yeah,
well, I need to know where he is all the time.
Ah, but there's a reason for that.
Because he likes to disappear and not answer me.
Yeah.
He's much older. He's 19.
Oh, okay.
So he like goes and visits, you know, friends like 4 hours away, and then just waits 24 hours to contact me.
Female friends, Mike.
Kids.
Yep. We were all there. At that one time, you know.
Yeah, so we're forgiving, but
yeah.
I stalk both of them. So it's not just Simon.
Yeah.
Well, at least your son hasn't run away on a train yet.
Which one?
The older one that has the wherewithal.
Ah, yes.
I guess. I mean, imagine that little toddler. Oh, yeah, he took the 5 o'clock.
Well, he is obsessed with trains right now, so
nice.
Kind of makes sense.
You're in Croton Harmon?
but that is your first song, Runaway Train, by Soul Asylum, power ballad by American rock band Soul Asylum.
Runaway Boy, train never come.
That takes me back to the 90s.
It does.
So hard, right?
why this song? It is hard, yeah.
So when that song came out, stuff was like going on in my family with like my mom, and just tumultuous times, I suppose. And I guess I really felt like I just wanted to disappear for a little while and just take off and just not come back. And the song reminded me, even though it's actually about runaways, like it's about kids who run away and you know, are never found. And I remembered that it wasn't that bad. Like the song kind of reminded me that it wasn't that bad, but the idea of just disappearing and running away on a train is still kind of appealing sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, several versions of the music video were made, and it featured kids who were missing. And the director, Tony Kaye, said that 26 missing children were found after being featured in the different versions of the videos.
Oh, that's
wow.
great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I never knew that.
Yep.
Was Runaway Train by Soul Asylum. I like that song.
I do too. That's why I picked it.
Yeah. very good song. I really like that. It's kind of aged well, isn't it?
I do think that it's one of those things that you can still listen to. Like there's some music that you just go, oh my God, why did we even like that at the time? And that's not
one
of them.
That one's not that. That's a good song.
Yep, it's great. Now, your next item, Naomi, is a survival kit. Ready.gov from the Department of Homeland Security recommends an emergency kit of the following items. 1 gallon of water per person per day. At least a 3-day supply of non-perishable food, battery-powered or hand crank radio, flashlight, first aid kit, extra batteries, whistle, dust mask, plastic sheeting, duct tape, towelettes, garbage bags, and plastic ties, wrench or pliers, can opener, maps, cell phone with charger. And it might be good to have a multi-tool, emergency blanket, cash, power plant, hospital, things like that. But what does your survival kit contain?
Well, to be quite honest, that would work. I was told I could bring 3 things, so I needed something.
Bag of chips, a candy bar, and a bottle of water.
Well, no, it said it has like 3 days of food, lots of water, just because I don't know where I'm going, so I would just want to be prepared. My life's motto is, you know, prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So I just feel like a survival kit made sense.
Yeah, well, you never know when you're out in the wilderness and the Catskills.
Yes.
Maybe some bear spray.
Bear spray, yeah.
Sure to come across
a
bear.
I would scream enough that it would run away.
Yeah.
I never saw like big animals till I came up here. You should have seen me the first time I saw a deer in real life. Uh-huh. I damn near crapped myself. I started hyperventilating. I could not even function. And it was like not that far from me. I don't deal well with wildlife.
I'll tell you what, and I'm being honest here, I really do miss seeing bears.
Yeah.
Ew.
Tell the story about the bear, the bird feeder.
So I had friends over visiting when I stayed in Jewett up in the mountain. I had friends over visiting and they wanted to see a bear. And, you know, unfortunately, it just eluded them. There was no bear to be seen. And they left in the morning to drive to the airport to go home. Because it was like, you know, 2 hour drive to, say, the train station and then, you know, and then however long it takes to get to JFK. So they left in the morning for the flight later on that afternoon. And unfortunately, about an hour after they left, I was sitting in the house and it was a beautiful sunny day. I had the French doors open and I could hear this noise. Excuse me, but it's like, right? And I thought it was my cat Ruby licking herself, cleaning herself, you know, washing herself. And I looked over and she was sound asleep.
The cat?
Yeah. So I was like, what's that noise then?
Yeah, Ruby's the cat. Did he say that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And I looked to it. And now, bear in mind, the house is wide open to the wilderness. There was this massive bear just lying under the apple tree about 15 yards for the porch. Just sitting, lazily eating apples and bird feed. And it just was lying there. And bizarrely, I just sat there and watched him. You know, I didn't try to get rid of him or anything like that. I just thought it looked so beautiful. It was like great. And I was the first thing through my mind was, if only Ange and Jerry were there, they would have saw this bear and they would have loved it. But it wasn't to be, but right. it was beautiful. I've seen about 3 or 4 bears. One day I was in the kitchen cooking and I heard this noise, a kind of a, right? And I was like, what is that? And I looked out the kitchen window and I saw the back end of this bear walking away. And I walked out a couple of yards to the front door and the door was open, but the fly, she, the
like the screen?
The screen. There was this big bear nose print.
Oh my God.
On the screen.
Oh, brother.
That's when I would have been calling my mom or my best friend being like, I'm moving home. I'm coming back now.
One day I was standing in the kitchen and I saw what must have been about a 450-pound black bear lazily walk by the driveway on the road.
Hey, neighbor.
And the first thing I thought about doing was, and I did
screaming
it,
and running?
I ran out to take a picture of it.
No, the wrong way. You ran the wrong way.
And I ran out, and by the time I got my camera and ran out, he must have been about 100 yards away, and I remember him just looking round as if to say, what?
Yeah.
And I just took a picture, and all I could get was the back end of him. Then I just went back up to the house.
None of those was your best bear story.
The one about the tree?
No.
Which one?
The one where you got up in the middle of the night and was eating out of like the hummingbird feeder on your deck, and then in front of the glass doors, and then you like clapped and scared it, and when it got startled and right. walked backwards off the edge of your your deck, and it fell like 3 feet and ran off. I can just imagine this huge yeah. bear, you know, totally at peace with the world, eating hummingbird food.
Yeah,
also gets scared and staggers so, backwards and
it just on. It looked like a, what do you call those things? The
clowns that you like
no,
whack.
No, the hairy things that you that don't exist, but they somebody's taking videos of them in the
oh like Bigfoot.
Oh, Sasquatch. Yeah,
yeah, Sasquatch. It looked yeah. like a Sasquatch because it was on its back hind legs, standing up, eating food from this bird feeder. Which was, and it carefully took it down, by the way, and drank it. It was a hummingbird feeder, as Mike said, and saw it, and I was like, just marveling at this thing. And then decided, right, it's had enough time, opened the door a little bit, hey! And it just startled it so much, as Mike said. It was on its and it just moved back and just. The bushes.
Yeah, I'm horrified hearing the story, and you were there.
Oh, it was great.
Like, I'm traumatized vicariously. No, no way.
Actually, myself and Mike saw one at his home.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Wyndham. Mm-hmm. We heard a noise, and we just saw one at the bins.
No. Yep.
It was a kind of small one, wasn't it?
That's probably a couple hundred pounds.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, to me, it was big, but I don't know. But it looked as though he couldn't be bothered. We went outside and looked at it from the top of the steps on that deck, and like without flinching, without really acknowledging us, it just went from eating trash to getting up and walking away.
Yep.
You know, there wasn't any jerky motion. It didn't like make eye contact. It just got up and left.
I think if you were to actually see one, Naomi,
I would shit myself. No, I would actually defecate on myself, and we would have bigger problems than the bear.
Okay.
Trust me, Andrew. When I tell you, when I've gotten spooked by deer.
Yeah. Well, like, a deer ran into my car one day and smashed the headlight.
Did you still give him a ride?
That was too deal.
I'll give you a ride, but you're paying for that.
He just wanted your attention.
Now, Naomi, your next item.
Oh, God.
Is a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know you played the guitar.
I've played the guitar since high school. I went to a high school that was very focused on music. So we had tons of different kinds of music classes you could take.
Right.
And as physical fitness really wasn't my forte, I tried to get into every musical class possible so that I could avoid going to gym. So you had to take music, right? And although I played the clarinet, I played the clarinet in marching band, which qualified as my gym. So yeah. So marching band, gym, I played the clarinet. So I had to take another music class. And I decided to take guitar, and I've just been playing it ever since. I just love the sound. Not like I used to. I actually went from beginner guitar to guitar one, guitar two, guitar ensemble.
Wow.
And then I was actually taking private lessons with this really great guy learning classical. I really love Eric Clapton.
I don't know if you know him.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of him. He was your teacher. That's incredible.
No, but I do like the song Cocaine. But no, I mean, I actually prefer classical guitar over, like, I know the assumption is electric, but
right.
I prefer classical.
Spanish guitar.
Love Spanish guitar.
Yeah.
I have a bit of guitar trivia.
Oh, God, I'm going to fail miserably.
The Fender Guitar Company makes guitar strings. Can you guess how many they make per day, Andy?
Wow. 150,000.
150,000? Naomi?
I'm going to say 500,000.
The answer is 90,000.
Oh. Wow.
90,000 per day. The world's largest guitar.
Playable guitar?
I think so. How long is it? I think it's playable.
I actually think I had this
before. Well, we'll do it again. It must be playable because I don't think this... It's not like a neon guitar that's over some hotel in Las Vegas or something.
12 feet? I don't know.
12 feet, Andy?
Is that the one that's about the size of a school bus?
Yeah. About 43 feet long, 2,255 pounds, 16 feet across, and only Paul Bunyan can play it.
Yeah, nobody can play it because nobody's got big enough hands to press down there with the strings.
Now, I didn't get to see the video of this, but one last trivia question for guitars. The world's fastest guitar solo, how many beats per minute did... and this was Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee. How many beats per minute?
Naomi?
I'm
going
to say 80.
80?
50.
1,600 beats per minute.
No way.
I can't even vocalize how fast that must have been.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, Flight of the Bumblebee.
Interesting. Now, Naomi.
Andrew.
Your next song, your third song.
Oh, God.
Is Hey Jude by
The Beatles, duh.
The Beatles.
The
why
Beatles?
Why that song?
Okay, it's sad again.
Yeah.
Welcome to Naomi's Depressing Life. Today we'll be talking about death and more death and more death. So it actually goes back to that same baby that we lost. We decided when we found out that baby was no longer had a heartbeat, we decided that before that baby was taken from us, because physically he was still with us, just not like his spirit, I guess. Before he was taken from us, I told my husband, I said, we have to name this baby. This baby can't go anywhere without a name. I can't let him go. And we were talking about different names and different meanings and things like that. And, we came up with his first name, which is Zachary, means remembered by God. And his middle name is actually Jude because of the lyrics of the song, Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You know, take a sad song and make it better. So that's one of Zachary's songs.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better. And anytime you feel the pain, hey Jude, refrain, don't care.
That was Hey Jude. What a magnificent song. Did you know, guys, that the coda at the end of the song is actually longer than the actual song, the body of the song? Did you know that?
Now we do.
Now we do. I had never realized that before.
And at the time, it was a hit. It was the longest number one song in British history at the time when it was number one.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole Hey Jude part is longer than the whole rest of the song.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. I thought it was, I don't know, half a minute or something, 20 seconds?
No.
No, like three minutes.
Nah, they were just getting warmed up.
Yeah.
Now, did you know, and I know, Naomi, you do know this, that the song originally wasn't called Hey Jude, it was called Hey Jules. And from the voice of from Paul himself, he said, I started with the idea of Hey Jules, which was Julian, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Hey, try and deal with this terrible thing, which was his mum and dad, John, and his wife, Cynthia, breaking up, and his dad beginning a relationship with Yoko Ono. I knew it was not going to be easy for him, Julian. I always feel sorry for kids in divorces. That was Paul McCartney's words.
Yeah.
He felt really sorry for Julian. And that was where the basis of the idea came from.
Hmm.
So there you are. Now, when Paul wrote the song, he took the song around and tried to get as many people to listen to it as possible because I think he was so excited by it. And he took it to a lot of people, a lot of local bands at the time, and he took it and interrupted a recording session by a kind of spoof band in Britain called the Barren Knights. And they let them hear it, and they let this guy, Ron Griffiths, of the group The Ivies, hear the song. And the Ivies were soon to be known as Badfinger. Now, Badfinger, Mike, you know who Badfinger is and what they sang. This is the reason I'm bringing it up. You do know their famous song.
I don't remember.
Baby Blue at the end of Breaking
okay.
Bad.
Yes, okay, yep.
So that's Badfinger.
Yep, okay.
So he let them hear Hey Jude, basically, to see if they liked it and what they thought about it, to critique it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he let a lot of people hear it. So, just thought I'd put a wee bit in there about Badfinger.
Yeah, nice. Breaking Bad.
Yes.
I know not of this.
Oh, Better Call Saul?
No, Disney watch it.
Thomas the Train.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
We branched out into like 101 Dalmatians one time, but that was like it.
Yeah, that's a great. we've been watching that on Disney Plus, and it's pretty great.
You actually Disney told me,
Plus. Yeah. Yes.
You actually told me that you've got Simon watching 1980 videos or something.
Yeah. Well, that was just the other day. He woke up in the morning. So at night we do all these songs, right? We play Hey Jude, and we play Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and. And so he woke up in the morning and he was like, I want music. So I was like, okay. So I didn't want to give him his nighttime music because I wanted him to wake up. So I started playing like kind of upbeat stuff to sort of wake him up. And it just morphed into this thing where he wanted to have more music in the living room. So I put it on YouTube on the TV. And there we are, 7 o'clock in the morning watching 80s hair bands. Like,
isn't that amazing though? Like that, we now live in an era where you can do that. Whereas if we were in the 80s or the 90s, you'd have to have MTV on and or something.
Oh yeah, and we when I was a kid, we couldn't afford cable. Like that was a luxury item.
Yeah, we never had cable.
Yeah, I remember when we first got a video machine. And there was like video shops everywhere.
Oh my gosh!
And a new release would come out, and you'd have to put your name down in a list to get it because so many people had. There was only like 6 copies of this video blockbuster, and. You had to put your name in. You can get it on next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, Now, another fantastic thing that you would like to take with you, Naomi, on your trip to the Catskill Cabin is, but you're not really committing here. You just say a thick book. Are you going to use it as an object to throw? Or are you going to
at
read
the bear.
Said thick book?
Again, a multi-use tool.
Are you going to use it to keep a door open or what?
I could. I could smash a small creature with it.
Right.
I could use it to prop open a door. I could throw it at a bear. I could throw it at any kind of wildlife that approached me.
Would there be any reading going on?
That was the original thought, but now my mind has expanded to what we could do here. No, I don't get to read much anymore, or like at all. So I would love, if I was going to like go away somewhere by myself and I didn't have Simon to entertain me, then I might as well bring a thick book and actually read.
Right. Are there any particular genres of books that you're interested in?
Couple few. I like...
genre
I prefer. I like fantasy, and I like, actually like horror books, but I won't watch a horror movie.
Yeah. Stephen King?
I used to like Stephen, I don't remember what I've read of Stephen King, but like, I remember I read like one Stephen King book. I liked crappy books like R.L. Stein.
And, oh yeah. Yeah. Goosebumps.
Well there, he had a Fear Street.
Is that
Street.
The name of the book, or is that what happens when you read the book?
It's a series of books. Yeah. Yeah.
Goosebumps. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Goosebumps.
It's a series of books that R.L. Stein wrote, and each, you know, individual book would be a different story, but that, you know, as Naomi says, is you're also meant to be, they were meant to be scary for little kids.
Ah, right.
But he also actually, I think it was before that, he wrote Fear Street novels.
Okay.
And Fear Street was much creepier.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
But that I can control. I can't control a movie, so I know.
When I was growing up, there was, you know, TV programs, but I think there was actually books about this as well. Hammer House of Horror. These were like scary shows, and I was like, wow, Hammer House of Horror. And when you look back, if you watch them now, you'd be like, that is so rubbish, you know. But when you were a kid, you know, it makes you scared, I suppose.
I want to read Secret Machines, in part by Tom DeLonge. It's Tom DeLonge, the singer from Blink-182.
Yeah.
Apparently these books are kind of about the these things that the Navy has been seeing, these objects, and supposedly in kind of a fictional way weaves together the nonfiction, supposedly, according to Tom DeLonge and all these advisors and stuff surrounding him. So if you guys are familiar with any of that, that's been going on. But I want to read the books. There's a whole series.
Yeah, I would like to read them as well.
Yeah.
I really
you guys would. Get back to me on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me know how they pan out.
Now, we could talk about that for ages, but I just want to do a couple of quiz questions.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Now, as of 2010, right, so 10 years ago, so admittedly this number is going to rise, how many estimated unique titles of books had been published in the world, do you think?
That's such a huge question.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with 400,000. 400 million. Sorry, 400 million.
Well, we're talking about all over the world. I'm going to go with 700 million.
It says here, in 2010, it was estimated that 13 million unique titles of books had been published.
We were just reaching for the stars.
Though. Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought it was going to be something like 2 billion or something. And I was like, oh, dear. But so, I'm not very good with numbers.
Now, what's the difference, do you think, between a novelette and a novella?
Number of pages.
That's my assumption.
I'll give you that, Mike.
Ooh, wow, I'm right. That's right? Weird.
Now, it's actually the word count.
Oh.
But there's also going to be
so
words.
That would be
correlation. It'll impact the amount of pages there are.
All right.
So, now, the novelette is made up of how many words, do you think?
Like a maximum amount?
From and to. Ugh.
Look, I was an English major, not a math major.
I'll give you the first number.
Okay.
Right, to kind of give you a ballpark
figure.
It's
not going to give us anything.
No, I will.
So right, a novelette
is... novelette is made up of, with the words of around 7,500 to...
20,000.
Naomi?
50,000?
Mike was closest. 17,500. Okay. Right? Like the novella is the type of fiction made with the words between 17,500 and...
27,000.
Sure, I'll go with that.
No, you need to guess independently.
I need to independently guess?
Yeah.
50,000.
Close. 40,000.
Ooh, nice job there, Naomi.
Right, now, the short story can be made with words around what?
Number-wise?
Yeah. Which would be, considered to be a short story.
5,000 to 10,000.
Mike's correct. The short story can be made with words around 10,000.
Oh my gosh!
But it can be more or less. So
okay, but what does he win?
He wins privilege of knowing that he was right.
I'll take it. It doesn't happen very much, so I got to revel in the little things. Your final song, Naomi, is Imagine.
Yeah.
Why that song, Naomi?
Because I love the lyrics. I mean, I love John Lennon, but I love the lyrics. I love the idea of imagining a place that doesn't have any evil, doesn't have any heartache, isn't sad, where people are just good, where we help one another, where we love one another. You know, I work in social services. I guess that's in my blood. But I just love the idea of imagining a place where there's harmony.
The Magnificent Imagine by John Lennon. Now, I know we're running short on time, but I just want to add a couple of things. Now, remember I said hold off in your opinion of Yoko Ono?
Yeah.
Now, shortly before his death, Lennon said that much of the song's lyric and content came from his wife Yoko Ono, and in 2017 she received a co-writing credit from him for the song. She wrote a book of poems called Grapefruit, and a lot of the stuff from the song came from that, which he kind of credited her with. Now, one of the things I just wanted to add here, Lennon said of the song Imagine that there was no more religion, no more country, no more politics. It was virtually the Communist Manifesto, even though it's not, he's not particularly a communist and he didn't belong to any movement. Some people did actually contradict him or argue with him that his song lyrics were pompous and contradictory. One critic said, Lenin's lyrics described hypothetical possibilities that offer no practical solutions, lyrics that are at times nebulous and contradictory, asking the listener to abandon political systems while encouraging one similar to communism. What do you think of that, guys?
I call bullarchy.
Yeah, it's he's an artist.
Well, somebody, the person wanted to say, he indicated the hypocrisy of Lenin.